we're starting.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. The people at the back can't see because of the sun, and this is a problem we have at St. Michael and All Angels, it always comes in on that window and blinds everybody at the Chiswick Book Festival. We know about that. But there are seats at the front, so if you'd rather come to the
four
front... four seats in the front row. But we'll leave it up to you. The sun will go. That is the way the sun works.
Please come forward, because we can see you're blinded.
We can see you're being blinded.
Come forward, there are seats
anyway.
Here.
Four here. Prime seats.
This is a bit of a road test. We haven't had an event here before. We've just moved in, so please forgive us.
So, good evening and a proper welcome to you all. It's a particular delight to see so many of you here today. My name's Colin Douglas and I'm the director of the Chiswick Book Festival. And as some of you know, we have been celebrating Arthur Sanderson and William Morris for many years through the Chiswick Timeline of Writers and Books, which sets out to document everybody who's ever lived in Chiswick and written a book. We're up to 450 so far, and if you know of any others, please tell me afterwards and we will add their names. Setting it up in 2018, I explored the websites of Sanderson and William Morris to try and unravel the business and see the very interesting relationship between these two titans who both were very, very influential but also lived in Chiswick for a while. I also love the fact that Arthur Sanderson, the son, and again, if you read your programme afterwards, you'll see that the original Arthur only lasted 3 years after setting up the factory, but his sons were more than a match for him and made it all happen. But I love the fact that they gave their home at 1 Duke's Avenue to be the library, to commemorate Victoria's Diamond Jubilee, and it is still the library today. And I just think we are very, very grateful to Sanderson for all sorts of things, but for that in particular. So you can see quite a lot of that Sanderson history in your programmes. I must acknowledge my debt to the Brentford and Chiswick Local History Society, who do a fantastic job. Val Bott was most apologetic she couldn't be here tonight, but if we do hold another one of these, and there are 67
Let's
on the waiting list, so you should be very, very... if we do, she will certainly be at that one. I must also acknowledge my debt to the original Chiswick Timeline, A History in Art and Maps, which is that wonderful mural under the bridges at Turnham Green Station, which we nicked the idea for our Chiswick Timeline of Writers and Books from. Voysey House is one of the 18 images on display. And then in 2019, we held the Chiswick Book Festival event with the William Morris Society in St. Michael and All Angels Church. It was entitled A New Road from Morris and Ruskin to Martha Armitage, and Morris and Company kindly sponsored it. And Martha Armitage, another icon of wallpaper in Chiswick, spoke at that event, and there is a beautiful book of her work. It is a very expensive, large book, but it is well worth your getting a copy and putting it here if that fits in with your branding.
I think we might have one upstairs tonight. And she's coming to visit us, so we'll make sure it's open.
Excellent. Then, with the Art Society Chiswick, I was shown round the wonderful Sanderson Archive, which was then located, can I say, in slightly less salubrious surroundings in Denham.
You're allowed to say that.
I drove out to Denham thinking there'd be this wonderful country house all dressed in Sanderson and really looking forward to it. And it's not that at all.
There are lots of lovely country houses dressed in Sanderson around there,
but not that one. So you can imagine how delighted I was when Sanderson, and in particular Lisa, announced that they were planning to move their headquarters back to Chiswick, and not just to any old office block in Chiswick, but Voysey House, where it all started. And they, of course, have now beautifully restored it. And afterwards, when we've spoken, come and have a look at some of the things in the cases, some of the historic books here. They are amazing. So I was equally delighted when they invited us into their home for their first public event, which this is. And I was even more delighted when tickets sold out, because it showed that everybody else was as excited about this as I was. And it wasn't just a bonkers sort of Chiswick fantasy. So it's not me who's welcoming you today, but the Chiswick team. And over the next hour, I'll be exploring with them Sanderson's past, its present, its very exciting plans for the future. So let's introduce them. Lisa Montague, their chief executive, has lived in Bedford Park for many years. It's her vision that has brought Sanderson Design Group back to Chiswick. She has huge experience running iconic and luxury brands, including a luxury fashion house in Madrid, Aspinall of London and Mulberry Group. Next to her, Claire Vallis. Vallis is the group's design director. She's responsible for all the brands in the portfolio and making them relevant for today's very discerning global audience. And finally, Dr. Catherine Sidwell. She's a design historian who's run projects and exhibitions around the world, including at the V&A and the British Museum. She was senior archivist here at the design, Sanderson Design Group. I say here, I mean there. And is also a founding member of the Voysey Society. And we're going to be asking her an awful lot about Voysey.
I've got some notes.
I'm also delighted to welcome in the front row Claudia Suckling, who is the chief executive of the William Morris Society. Obviously, the links between Morris and Sanderson are deep and complicated and huge and mutually satisfying, so we're going to hear a bit about that as well. But we also want to hear from you, because I know some of you have got really interesting stories as we've been discovering, and in many cases may know more than us about the building we're in, that building over the way, and so on. So we're going to be chatting till about 8:15, then another drink, and then we can look around. But it's going to be very free-flowing, and I'm going to start with you, Lisa. So what made you think to do this, and why did you want to do it?
I think it was that red brick building and on the A40, 5 years of going out there. It was obviously, when I took this role, which was 5 years ago now, I, living locally, was aware of the Sanderson buildings and put a watch on them. And as you know, my husband's an ex-journalist, and 3 years ago, he said, those buildings that you like, one of them's just sold, and here's the name of the person that's bought it. I contacted him. We had a coffee at High Road House. We did one of those sign on a napkin deals of you restore the building, we'll be your tenant, and wouldn't that be wonderful to go home? So we were both very delighted. And it was lovely because actually Dorrington, the company that bought it, and Sean Gorvey, who owns and runs that, he is an absolute arts and crafts fanatic. He lives in the Voysey house. His office is in the Voysey building. And so he's extremely proud of this addition to his portfolio and allowed us also to have a little bit of an input into how we'd like it to be. So it's been an absolute joy and a pleasure. It's taken a little bit longer and quite possibly cost a little bit more than was planned at the time. But it was, you know, for me, running a heritage brand, it's just an absolute privilege to bring it back home, and to be an industrial building as well, which was something when we started to look for a new home, actually finding somewhere that will hold the weight of the archive was also really rare. So we have craned it in to the third floor, some 75,000 historic documents in heavy cases in climate-controlled space, which was... that's never moving again, by the way. Which was an absolute feat of engineering. We had the council saying they weren't sure Barlymow Passage was strong enough to hold the crane. I was worried with an office on the second floor that it would stay on the third floor. But, of course, we couldn't put it on the ground floor, and you don't want it below ground. So, you know, that was that's also serendipity, it's supposed to be.
And when you imagined it, what did you want this space to be?
Well, we saw it as... I don't know if you remember, it's been a...
Some people do remember this building, but...
The floor levels were all over the place, so I think the ground floor was sort of halfway up the window when we first saw it, but, of course, it's now much better proportioned. We really wanted this to be, this ground floor, to be an event space and a design hub for interior designers, which is hopefully what it will become. Now, we've been in for 3 weeks... We're still working it out. But I think that the space, the way we've divided it up, allows us to push these panels back, to decorate them, to have one big open space, but also for it to be a working space for interior designers, which would be our absolute ideal. We do have a showroom in Chelsea Harbour, which is also important. But we'll see whether we can make this a West London design destination.
So a lot of people still remember Berners Street as Sanderson's headquarters. Is this the equivalent of that in some way or not really?
It could be. You know, that was very much, I think, you know, really through the heyday of Sanderson from probably the 1950s through to the 1980s, really, before we had that period of minimalism that came along. Thankfully, we're going back into pattern and texture and design now. You know, that was really the destination for home design, even within Europe, you know, and certainly in London and the UK. And if we could bring Sanderson back to life with that recognition again, yeah, that would be an absolute dream. And he absolutely deserves that, you know, and I think it's the right time to be doing it. So here we are. Mm.
So tell us, what is the Sanderson Design Group? What are the different bits of it?
Well, it used to be called Walker Greenbank, but I have famously tried to change the name of many companies I've worked for. Loewe was a bit of a challenge on the pronunciation, but we got over that eventually. But Walker Greenbank was a merger of two engineering companies, sort of, you know, back in the day, and then moved away from engineering into buying brands and actually bought Sanderson out of receivership in 2003. And in 2000, yesterday, we were celebrating the textiles printing mill, which is up in Standfast.
That's in Lancaster?
In Lancaster, which is 100 years old, that was bought in 2000. So the group really evolved a lot through acquisition recently. And when I started and tried to explain at an event in Paris who I worked for, nobody knew Walker Greenbank. Why should they? But they did know the brands, obviously. These famous heritage brands, Morris & Co., Sanderson, Sofony, which is more recent, but also goes back to Temple Newsom and history in Leeds and restoration of grand buildings. And so I thought Sanderson Design Group, first of all, everybody can pronounce around the world. You know, we have a big international business and we aim to be more global than we are today. And design, it puts at the heart of everything that we do, because whether you're in manufacturing, and we champion British creativity in manufacturing, we have two factories, one for textiles and one for wall coverings, which is in Loughborough. They're probably both about 100 years old. Then design is what binds us all together, and this purpose that we talk about, bringing the beautiful into people's homes and lives and doing that in the most responsible way that we can. Because, you know, if we go into that, dyeing and printing is not a green business, but we can do it in the best way that we possibly can. So we put design at the heart of it, Sanderson at the front of it, and we are a group that manufactures and has consumer brands as well that we distribute. Mm.
So sustainability is one of the things. What can you actually do to be sustainable?
Oh, lots. We've done lots. We can do lots more. So in the last few years, we're in the sixth year, which sounds a bit old because we've been here for five, but with Planet Mark, we work on a certification process, and there's lots of those, but with the Royal Warrant Holders Association as well, because Sanderson has currently the warrant. Of course, we're in the process of that all being reconsidered and renewed. Yeah, so do I. Sanderson's had the warrant for two kings and a queen, so, and they've visited here, so hopefully we'll have that privilege again one day. So, yeah, being a warrant holder, there's also an obligation, and now more than ever, to have that sustainability credentials. And so the way we work is really important, but we find the pressure comes from the team inside rather than the consumer, actually. And it's our teams that come up with what we should be doing, how we can do it. And, you know, we've turned off the steamer on a Friday in the factory and we've reduced emissions by 20%. Well, there you go. So actually, over the last 5 years, we've reduced our total carbon emissions by 40%, which by any means is a good number.
You've got a new Bedford Park collection. Is that to celebrate you moving in, or was that already on the horizon? Or?
It was on the horizon. It might have had a new name. And I'm very pleased that the designer we know, we're probably not allowed to disclose exactly which house, but there's a house on our street that's being renovated and using that design.
Excellent.
Yeah, in Bedford Park. So, yeah, all very exciting. Yeah.
But you're very keen to big up the Chiswick-Bedford Park connections.
Well, yeah, it's all part of the history, and it's a very important part of history. This was the centre of the arts and crafts and design world, and one of the many things that Sanderson did well, and actually it was the boys, it was three sons and Harold, who was a particular entrepreneur, who at a very young age was very entrepreneurial, and he, at the end of the arts and crafts period, bought up all of the archives from many smaller designers, and so we have a lot in the archive that is not only Sanderson, and of course quite a chunk of the Morris Lifestyle Archive, but also other designers from the time. And Bedford Park in this area was at the heart of it all. So, yeah, it is important to us.
Good.
That's why we're here, with our friends Morris Society up the road, Emery Walker's house that we celebrated just a few years ago, and we're looking forward to doing more of that, finding more treasures.
So, Claire, how do you use the archive in the design that you're now doing?
Well, as Lisa said, we've got six brands, so
a lot to go at, really, and also a huge amount of resource in that archive. But we use it literally, it's at the bedrock of everything that we do. So we have Zoffany, which is very much at the top of the tree, and that's very much about restoration. And so the archive is an incredible resource around a restoration project, around a particular period. It's also, Zoffany's, all of our lead designers are experts in manufacturing. Making is something that's incredibly important to us. So we take those archives and we recreate them within our factories. Then we've got, obviously, Sanderson and Morris. They're our heritage brands. And with each of those, we have what we call our design pillars. All the brands have a design pillar. So with Morris, for instance, there's four design pillars. One of them is authentic. So again, we're taking archives from our own archive, but also we'll work with other people like Emery Walker or somebody else who has something, you know, like an interesting document, and we'll again try to recreate those as close as possible. Then we have what we call Simply Morris, which is basically colouring and creating product that's right for the market. And so our focus at the moment is US. They love Morris, they really enjoy the designs, but perhaps some of the colorations are quite heavy and the weight of the fabric is a little bit too heavy and strong. So we, again, take the documents from the archive, but we reimagine them into something that would work in a sunshine state on a beach kind of feeling, you know, so that's really important. And it opens up those wonderful designs, that beautiful symmetry of design, but out to another audience. Then we have what we call our Disruptor Collections, which some of you have seen. That's the first one of those was with a designer called Ben Pentreath, and he went back into the archive. We always love to invite people into the archive, and he saw the sort of 1960s iterations of Morris & Co., where they're bonkers colours, they're really bonkers. And he wanted to recreate them. He was actually trying to recreate them by over-dyeing them. So we said, OK, let's launch them, thinking it would create a lot of press, but maybe, you know, who knows what the sales would be like, but it's interesting to bring those things back out. But it's been really successful for us. And so playing with it, showing it in a more maximalist way, I guess, for all those lovers of pattern and colour, that's perfect. And then the final one is Pure, where we take almost like the simplicity of the line of something like a Morris design or a Sanderson design and really kind of work with a technique, maybe like an embroidery or some kind of wallpaper printing technique that gives it a really beautiful tactile nature. So it's more about texture. And what we're trying to do in our next thinking is not only would it be pure in name, but pure in nature. So how do we make it as sustainable as possible? And trying to think about if William Morris was alive today, what would he want it to be? You know, obviously he would be at the forefront of that thinking. And so it's important for us to do that. But even the contemporary brands, and we have three of those, so we've got Harlequin, Scion and Clark & Clark, all the designers paint and draw their own designs. And they will all go back into our archive and feed our archive. So it's a continual process. They'll also take out things as a reference and reimagine them, because those layouts, those perfect balances of florals, they're actually a wonderful way of teaching young new designers how to balance a design. So I will literally say to them, right, that is, you know, something like a Hickenham, for instance, Sanderson design, or Rose and Peony, you know, that's a beautiful balance. And so they use that as a layout and then recreate it completely over the top of that. But they understand then how to balance. And it's not taught in universities anymore. So we're very keen that that's something, that Sanderson way of painting and drawing, which actually Kenneth Truman was so brilliant at. He had a school of art that literally taught people how to do that. I would like to be able to continue that training and that understanding. And because we're making as well, it's just a fantastic story. So, yeah.
So who is doing this? Is it your staff, your employees, or you're inviting other designers in to look at the archive?
Yeah, so each brand has its own studio. Each brand has its own lead designers. The heritage studios are here, and then the contemporary studios. One is in our Loughborough, which is where our wallpaper factory is, and one further north in Manchester. But yeah, they're teams of designers coming up with a concept. So we plan ahead on what we need in the market. So nobody needs more stuff. We understand that. So we're trying to be really responsible about that. We've done a lot of work around our SKU management so that we're really focusing on what really needs to come to the market to fill our portfolio. And so we work on that as a plan, and then designers come in. Sometimes we work with outside designers. We also have some really trusted freelance designers that we know their hand and that they can actually recreate something really quite special. And it can take a very long time as well. So we've always got people working on something at some point, because the way that the collections work, it's not like one finishes, another one starts. It's like an evolution all the time, because we work 18 months to 2 years ahead. So it's basically a constant evolution of designing.
Ben was interesting, wasn't it? Because that was actually during COVID.
There's this gentleman that doesn't look very well in the second
room. Oh, dear.
Okay. Oh, dear.
This gentleman's not very well. Have we got anybody with first aid?
Is there some water?
He's
feeling much better.
Feeling much better, and there is no shortage of sofas here, which is a good thing. But thank you, everybody who came and helped, and so on. In terms of design, how many new designs or new collections do you do a year? And talking about sustainability, why do we need another collection?
Exactly. Well, we like to think that we'll bring something beautiful that people will have in their homes for a very long time. So we're not creating a fashion moment in any way. So we really want it to be something that is cherished and almost like an heirloom piece in that way. So we launch twice a year. So spring is obviously a big season for us. And then we launch again in the autumn. Most of the brands will launch once, really, so that's once a year, and we'll do a fabric collection, a wallpaper collection, maybe a upholstery collection as well. So
we have reduced it dramatically though.
I was going to say yeah.
There used to be many more launches, but you know, we do take the view now that, you know, we need to reduce waste. There has to be a purpose, there has to be reason to everything, and so revisiting a collection, and we have endless discussions, don't we? until we get to, you know, the true purpose of something. And one of the beautiful things, for me, having been in fashion leather goods before, is that we have the luxury of taking time to work on a design until it's absolutely ready. I mean, nothing's probably ever perfect in the eye of the designer, but ready to launch and ready to fulfil that purpose in the market. Because it doesn't matter if it launches on, you know, March or April, really, because it's not going to make a difference. Hopefully it's going to last for 100 years.
Mm. I think that pace was something that when Lisa first joined, because obviously from fashion, was quite... I've been with this business for 30 years, so I know interiors and fabric and wallpaper very well. But when Lisa joined, she was very frustrated by the pace of the way that this industry works. You know, people take a long time to make a decision. You'll launch a collection, and whereas in fashion you would say that you'll instantly know whether that's going to be a successful launch or not, in home they may sample it, but it will go onto a designer's mood board. There might be other renovations going on in the house. It takes a long time. And so you don't really know. We think it's about 9 months. Whichever way we look at it, it's 9 months. Before you launch a collection, 9 months after, you'll know whether you've got a success on your hands, which is frustrating on one hand, but the wonderful thing about it is we still have things in our range that have been there for 20 years. You know, it moves slowly, but then also people... When you've got a design that they love, we might reinvent it sometimes, but often we don't. There's just a beautiful classic colourway that just works, and is really, you know, wonderfully pleasing at in any generation. So.
And how often do your fastest moving consumers change their wallpaper or their?
Well. Unfortunately, we'd like them to do a lot more. When we went to... the statistic is something every 7 years, which we're not happy about at all. The one thing I would like to encourage is when we went to the Emery Walker house, they had that habit of summer curtains and winter curtains, putting things away, taking care of them. We'd very much like to see that
That's
come back.
And, of course, there are insulating properties.
Insulating properties to your curtains, keeping your fuel bills down.
Well, we've seen a lot of fabrics on the walls recently, you know, particularly in America, but also anybody who visits the Wow House, there's an awful lot of fabric now on the walls and battened and so on, and that's really encouraging too.
Yeah. And as Lisa said before, you know, that feeling of pattern and colour and, you know, it really is so evocative, and it makes a home feel very, I think, homely, I suppose, and really individual as well. And so, thankfully, the minimal sort of style that was fashionable for quite some time has definitely become less fashionable, and so we are definitely feeling like this is a moment, and not even a moment. We think it's going to last quite some time, because generally trends, and we'll see them in the archive as well, don't we, of just kind of like how after periods of austerity people turn back to pattern and colour and really try and, you know, bring that sort of feeling back to their homes. And we think we've got about another 10 years, don't we, Lisa?
Well, we'll take it. But generally speaking, you know, you could say design cycles tend to last 30 years or so. Catherine will comment on that. I mean, I'm no art historian, but, you know, periods of... And if we look at minimalism, it's been about 30 years. And then maximalism came through on the runway with Gucci and Alessandro Michele about 8 years ago now. But it takes time to filter through. So the early adopters might have been decorating with more pattern and colour for 5 years now. But it's probably just about filtering through. We're seeing it in editorials and magazines. Lots of, you know, matching wallpaper and fabrics, which we can do. wallpaper on the ceilings, much more pattern again and decorative styles on all five walls, which is really exciting for us, because we like more than the cushion as a feature. We like really curtains and swags and things back. But, so that's exciting. But I think attention spans are shorter these days, and Instagram, everything's much more instant. So if we do get 10 or 20 years of this and then it starts to fade back into something else, then...
But I also think coming back here to Chiswick is, you know, it's very much... It feels like coming back home to the home of pattern and colour, and, you know, that's going to be hugely important to our customers as well, you know. So I feel like Sanderson Design Group really just champion pattern and colour, you know. We're not shy from that, and we're able to showcase it here, which is really, really quite special, I think.
Does film and television help in any way? Is there a Downton, Bridgerton
effect? Bridgerton, all of those things, yeah.
Queen's Gambit, Bridgerton.
All of those. And we feature in so many of those as well.
Do you use that? I mean, do you actually then market the fact that you're in it, or is it a more subtle thing than that?
There's been elements where we've had... So Pimpernel was shown in... and the backdrop of a shop with Goldie Hawn and... Kurt Russell, yes. And that shot with the Pimpernel behind went viral, and it literally changed Pimpernel kind of overnight.
In the States, it had an absolute run on it. We couldn't figure out what was happening.
We've got Pimpernel table mats. I didn't know that.
Oh,
they were certainly fashionable again. We've had them a long time. Hang on to them, absolutely.
Yeah. But you definitely see, even with all cultures, you know, like pop culture and people being photographed with pattern and colour behind it. And, you know, because we have such iconic brands, it often is a Sanderson or a Morris design, which is fantastic, because I would really like us to be known exactly for that. So,
over there, you've got the Disney book open. Tell us about the Disney home and stuff.
Disney was a really interesting and exciting one. So we always knew we had these amazing documents in the archive. And we had talked to Disney about it. Our commercial director, who was his 60th birthday, it's tomorrow, but we celebrated it today. He had one of the designs on a Disney cake, so you can tell that he is really keen. So he was always championing the idea of working with them. But, you know, we thought, how would that be? You know, Disney being such a big beast and everything. But they came back to us to say, actually, they were celebrating 100 years, and so they would really love to do something. And could we do it? Literally, it was about sort of 6 months' time, which for us is a very quick timeline.
So we weren't sure we could do it.
We
had to have a little chat with ourselves. Actually, it's Disney, so just
we'll just do it.
Find some design resource and do it.
Yeah,
because we were full with our program timetable. We've got to do this.
We're
so we turned it around really fast. I mean, we had such a laughing. I mean, even with the legal team, you can imagine health and safety. Yeah, we actually had to drop the three little pigs because they had to have somebody supporting the ladder. never mind, the wolf was blowing the house down. And don't talk about flying elephants, but, you know, could Minnie Mouse wear a seatbelt in the car?
Minnie has got a seatbelt. And there was a couple of times when I just said to them, you know what, because the one thing we were so keen on it, that it was as authentic as possible, because then it would be cool, because I didn't want it to be like too Disney now. I wanted it to feel exactly like those beautiful 1930s archives. So all the way through, we kept saying, yeah, I just don't know if we can, you know, it's just too PC, too far, and they were brilliant, actually. They understood, and they're so pleased with it, to a point where...
They're decorating their resorts, which is really very nice. Really, yeah. But we had to change something, didn't we? Because actually those original Fantasia characters were quite...
Brutal.
Mm. Yeah. So those poor dwarves, you know, they'd beaten each other up with it. Mm-hmm.
They had like...
And bumps on their head, and they all had to take that out.
So we put paintbrushes into their hands instead.
And so Donald Duck had an ice pick in his hand.
Donald Duck is a complete recreation, because we couldn't find... All our archives at Donald Duck were all really menacing. And so we basically created... We took
a friendlier
the character
version.
And then created a friendlier version. Mm. But, yeah...
But we didn't want it to be junior, so we did that very sort of vintagey, dressed down, quite authentic, and the designers were incredible. They hand-drew the 101 Dalmatians, you know, was more recent, so it was completely recreated in the style of the original Fantasia, which was lovely.
And we used a toile, so we had a lovely scenic toile in the archive, and then what we did was use that toile... sort of hand tint it and then put the Dalmatians and the characters into it, and it's just ended up looking like this really beautiful pastoral scene, which you then, when you look, you realise it's 101 Dalmatians. But that's so much what we wanted to do. We wanted to interior designers to use it in different spaces, not just for children, but for, you know, all sorts of different, for conversational pieces, really.
Let's bring Catherine. So you came into Sanderson for about 18 months on the archive, but you've got all this other experience all around the world of exhibitions and projects. What was it like, the Sanderson experience for you?
Well, first of all, I just think it's totally fantastic that you've returned home. And this building has lived for over 120 years. And it's a really unique building designed by Charles Francis Annesley Voysey, who I'm just completely nuts about. I first saw his work when I was 19, when I was studying. And it's a thrill to be here this evening in this lovely building with you. I think it's just fantastic that the brand has lived on and has got way to go. Voysey not only built this building for the Sanderson brothers, he also designed wallpapers for the firm and for several other firms. So he was an independent designer of pattern for wallpapers and textiles. But he designed over 100 buildings, 50 of them were built. Many of them still stand, but this is the one and only factory building, and it's fantastic to be here.
Do you know why it's the only one? He didn't like it, or
Well, as an architect, he actually lived here early in his career, from 1885 to 1888. He lived here at 7 Blandford Road. Does anyone live in his house? But he lived there and married, and that was their first home together. So they were here for 3 years, and I believe his older sister also lived in Bedford Park and was married to a Scottish chap, a really charismatic chap called Brodie Innes of the Golden Dawn, a rather interesting religious sect.
Which in Bedford Park was thriving.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So he moved in after his sister was living here, and I imagine he mingled socially with his wife and met the Sanderson family. And then he built 14 South Parade, which is this iconic white tower building. And you're lots of lovely nods in the audience. I'm glad. And that was a really early project for him. And then in the 1890s, he had a really big success with his country houses. And then in 1902, this factory was built. It's the only factory, but he did have clients who were industrialists. So he was building for very wealthy people who were making money through coal mining or shipping and things like that, but also writers and artists. He was building studios for, like 14 South Parade. But also there's another studio in Hammersmith. So two sort of studio houses locally. And then several houses in London, in and around London and in the home counties. But Currer Briggs, who he built Broadleys for in the Lake District, which is situated overlooking Windermere. That was built for a man who made he made money through coal, and he became mayor of Leeds, and Voysey built